I want to share with you a few things about Speaker Jim Rodd that some of us as form ears may not be familiar with. Some of us are fortunate to live in Fort Worth and to visit with the Speaker quite often on a more intimate basis. I see Gilbert across the table here, who started campaigning for the Speaker when he first ran for office. We have Tony Morales here, who also was with him in the beginning. So there are many of us who know some intimate things about Rodd. Jim Rodd has been a long admirer and friend of our founder, Hector P. Garcia. I heard him say earlier today, he's one of my oldest friends, because that friendship goes back some 30 years. It isn't anything new. He has been with us for a long time, even back in the days when it might not have been popular for officials to be friends with this type of organization or with us. He has continued to be a good friend of the American GI Forum throughout all of these years. He is an honorary member of the American GI Forum. He's a veteran like many of us here. He served in the Army Air Corps during World War II, receiving an honorable discharge. As a young boy, Jim Rodd grew up in Weatherford, Texas, which is just a few miles west of Fort Worth. His parents were very much like many of our parents, a working family, a poor family, struggling to provide their children with the best education possible. His family, like many of the American GI Forum members, believed in education as a priority, so they struggled to give their children an education. After Jim returned from military service, and at the age of 23, he was elected to the Texas legislature, destined to continue service to his country. At the age of 26, he was elected mayor of Weatherford, at that time the youngest mayor ever to serve in any city in Texas. At the age of 31, he was elected to the U.S. Congress, and in 1976, he was elected by his peers as majority leader. And again in January 1987, he was sworn in as Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives. We all know the Majority Leader. We know that Jim wields the gavels in Congress. He meets with kings, queens, and great leaders of nations. What we might not know is that he also attends small groups of four-year meetings, receptions, to discuss with us affairs of veterans, problems, to discuss with us world affairs, and to ask how he can best assist us with the American GI Forum interests. For example, in 1981, a small group of 4 years in Fort Worth met with him to discuss the needs of establishing a Vietnam Vet Center in Fort Worth to serve the war stress disorders of Vietnam veterans who were returning home. He maneuvered our request through government bureaucracy, and after about 1.5 years later, a vet center was established, which still exists today. In 1983, again, a group of 4 mere members from Fort Worth met to ask his assistance in establishing a much-needed veterans hospital to serve our district and the thousands of veterans in our area. The GI Forum National Veterans Outreach Program had identified this need. Again, he assigned staff to work with us to clear the barriers for us. A Veterans Administration outpatient clinic has been approved and is scheduled to officially open in January 1990. When he is unable to attend the annual Founders Banquets in Corpus Christi, he always assigns someone to come here to honor our founder. He sends a representative to our state and national conventions as well as other state meetings to learn how he can best support the interests of the American GI Forum. He supports the American GI Forum National Veterans Outreach Program by writing letters of support for funding of our programs to continue our efforts to serve those who serve their country. This is Jim Rodd. We might not know about Jim Rodd, but Jim Rodd is a friend, as I said, of our founder and of the American GI Forum, as well as a special friend of all Hispanics throughout the country and in Texas especially. I am privileged to present to you our good friend, a good friend of the American Jail Forum, Jim Wright, Speaker, U.S. House of Representatives.
It's a grand pleasure. Particularly, let me say what a really great pleasure it is for me to have been given such an honor to be here on this particular day when you honor the women of this organization. Someone called this the Rose Luncheon, La Rosa. Posiblemente, la flora más perfecta. Las damas de esta organización están las rosas de nuestras familias, siempre. And for that reason, I want to express to you my thanks for this opportunity to be here with you, particularly on this day when we honor the women of this organization and of this movement and of our country. Se dice que la mano que arruda la cama del niño manda el mundo, ¿verdad? Sí. Dijo que la voz de la madre ablanda al muchacho en la familia, determina el futuro del hombre y determina el futuro de la raza humana. Totalmente. If anyone doubts that truth, I wish you would visit sometime with Roy Benavides. You know Roy Benavides? Our Congressional Medal of Honor winner. I have visited with Roy many times. Roy will tell you about that episode, if you press him and if you ask him, in which he received the Congressional Medal of Honor, overrun in a foxhole by superior numbers, almost killed, battered in the head by the butts of rifles. Roy says, just as he was about to pass out, just as consciousness was about to leave him, and the will to live and to strive was about to be extinguished, he heard from somewhere in the midst of his memory the voice of his mother as she spoke to him as a child. And to him came those words spoken by his mother, "No te rajes." Roy Benavides says that it gave him the will to live and the will to strive and the will to persevere and the will to triumph. And that's what it means to all of us and all of our organizations. Isn't it true the things that are said to us by our mothers at home, they have been the same? Cualquier familia. They would say, defend yourself, but don't start fights. Protect the younger ones, the weaker ones, the smaller ones. Stand up for those who are absent. If unfair criticism is rendered against some member of the family when not here, speak up for him or her. Try to be a voice for the voiceless. Try to be a hand for the powerless. Try to be a help for the helpless. Isn't this the stuff to which all of us aspire as men? And why do we do it? To try to be worthy of the women in our lives. And isn't that the stuff of which heroes are made? And isn't that a perfect description? Those very things, to be a voice for the voiceless, a help for the helpless, a hand for the powerless, that characterize the life of the founder of this organization, whom we honor today, Dr. Hector Perez Garcia. Someone said, Jim, what do you want to do? Everybody brags on Hector. You should roast him. You roast Hector Garcia. You might as well roast Billy Graham or Mother Teresa, you know. He is our friend. We revere him and respect him. And he stands for all these great and noble things that that we have been taught from our infancy and from our childhood. And that's what we want our country to stand for, really, isn't it? You know, we must look forward. We can't always look back. 40 years is the flicker of an eyelid in the sweep of history. A very brief time in the memory of the universe. Just a moment on the yardstick or the clock of civilization. And yet in these 40 years of this organization, great progress has been made. Enormous progress has occurred. I can remember those days 40 years ago when first I met Dr. Garcia. I was a member of the Texas House of Representatives, Hugo. We were struggling then just to allow Hispanic people to go to certain schools. And we were struggling then to permit women to serve on juries. They didn't do it then. And we were struggling for all kinds of rights. That, you know, was in the days before we wrote the Voting Rights Act. And there were places where there was systematic denial. People not even given the opportunity to vote, or to participate, or to go to certain schools, or to get an education, or to ever hope to own their own homes, or to ever have the hope for a better life. And because Hector Garcia and a few other people had the vision and the dream and the determination to make things better, and because all of you and the others who founded and started and persevered in this organization worked together, things are better, and they've improved. And our nation's been stronger because of it. This is not a country where everyone is exactly the same. I remember when I was a boy, I used to hear the story of the melting pot, and I believed in it. And I thought, what a wonderful thing. There aren't any Hispanic Americans, and there aren't any Anglo-Americans, there aren't any other kinds of Americans. We're all Americans, just one thing. That's what my father used to say. My dad was a great egalitarian. He said, there's no such thing as a hyphenated American. And yet I suppose we know, as we mature and observe, that not everybody is exactly the same, and thank God we're not all exactly the same. It would be a boring existence if we were. And so maybe it isn't exactly a melting pot where all of the different ores are poured into the cauldron and it comes out in a single stream of sameness. Maybe it's more like a vegetable stew, more like a vegetable soup, where each of the vegetables retains a bit of its own identity and yet gives flavor to the whole. Maybe that's what we are as Americans. And maybe ours is a tapestry. Maybe our country is a tapestry that is more beautiful because of the different colors of the different threads that are woven into the same tapestry, and would have no beauty at all if it was all identically the same drab color. And so I have come to the recognition that the wonder of this nation of ours is the magnificence of the rainbow. It's the fact that we can be all these things that we are and still be Americans with identically the same rights. And that's the goal. And that's what we've striven for. And that's what we continue to strive for, because that's what makes a nation strong. And it's going to be here. I think we can be sure also that we're going to have a strong national defense. You know, to think that national defense is a partisan issue, I think, is a foolish thought. We all stand under threat of the mushroom cloud. It is no respecter of persons or of political parties. We live in a world with strong defense. We have more than 12,000 nuclear guided missiles. Enough power to blow up every city in the world many times over. We've built a strong defense. And your Congress has been willing to pay for that defense. We've doubled the annual amount that we've put into the defense of the United States since just the beginning of this decade. We were contributing $146 billion in the year 1980, $300 billion this year. Can you believe that that's too little? Twice as much as just those few short years ago. Exactly the same amount that the congressional leadership and the president agreed upon 1 year ago. It isn't a weakened defense. And anyone who suggests that the veto of the defense authorization bill is because it weakens our defense just doesn't know what he or she's talking about. It's the same amount the president agreed to 1 year ago. It contains the same language that we had in the same bill 1 year ago. There's nothing new about that. And all the weeks it was being studied in the Congress and proceeding through the conference committee of the House and the Senate, there was not one suggestion from anybody in the Department of Defense that it was inadequate or that it was bait for a veto. And I'm told the Secretary of Defense urged the President to sign the bill, and that a stalwart Republican senator who is the ranking member on the Armed Services Committee in the United States Senate suggested the President should sign the bill. And so please do not be deceived with any representation that either political party is against a strong defense. We're for a strong defense because we're all Americans. I guess what we do want to insist upon, though, is that we get all the defense that we're paying for. Now, I think a strong nation needs some other things, too. It isn't just weapons of destruction. My Lord, if that's all it took to triumph in the world and to work one's will, we never would have won our independence from Great Britain, would we? In those days, we were 13 weak, independent little republics, just a little ribbon of settlement across the eastern seaboard, raising ourselves up to be independent against the strongest, most powerful nation in the world. They had military dominance, but we had spirit, and we won our independence. It isn't just a matter of who's got the most weapons. And you know, to tell you the whole truth, if it had just been a matter of who had the most money spent on weapons, we would have triumphed in Vietnam, wouldn't we? We had more money, spent more on weapons. It's something more than that. There has to be the will. There has to be the sense of oneness among all of our people, not a sense of division, dividing some people, class against class, race against race, religion against religion, section against section. No, just what we said a while ago, one people. One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. That's got to be the sense and the spirit. That's what makes a nation strong. And it takes education. With the sophistication built into all of the weapons systems today, I can assure you, we'll not long be first in defense if we ever settle for second best in education for our young. I told you a moment ago that we are spending some $300 billion this year on weapons, strength. You know how much the federal government spends on education? $18 billion. 15 times more for weapons to destroy than we spend for mines to build, to explore, find a better future. And in just these past few years, administrative suggestions and annual budgets sent from the White House have recommended reductions in our commitment to quality education for all of America's children. And we haven't agreed to that. And in this past year, For the first time in this decade, Congress finally was successful in voting a greater commitment for education, because education is the tool of the future. You know what the best investment this country ever made, in my opinion, is? I think the best investment we ever made was the GI Bill of Rights at the end of World War II. It committed an entire generation of Americans, you see, to get a college education. Back in the days before World War II, when people of my generation and Dr. Garcia, who's just a few years older than I, were struggling to go to college. You know how many of us in my age group got to go to college and finish college? Slightly less than 5%. And that hasn't been so terribly long ago. And now, because we put the emphasis upon the GI Bill of Rights, it's 20%, four times as good. Still not good enough in a country as rich and as wealthy and as beneficently endowed as ours. We must provide the opportunity for every American who desires one to get a college education. Every American. Okay. And that's what America's all about. That's the first thing. The dream, the American dream, that the humblest child, born of the most improvident circumstance, may have as his or her birthright the right to get an education as good as that afforded by a king or a prince or a potentate anywhere else on earth. That's what makes a country strong. That's the greatest security. We have to fight against those things that invade our security. And the most terrible menace of our present moment is the menace of illegal drugs, invading our streets, invading our neighborhoods, invading the school grounds where we send our children. And one of the problems is that while we are spending as much money as we're spending on defense and on weapons, and while we're losing as much as we are in industrial production and causing our nation to lose sales abroad by competition, we're losing about $36 billion a year to drugs and the drug culture in lost time, absenteeism, and industrial accidents caused by the use of drugs. And that makes us less competitive on the world market. Last week, the Senate, under the direction and stellar leadership of Lloyd Bentsen, passed a bill which we already had passed in the House to improve our position in the world of trade, rules and the tools and the schools, to make the United States first again among our nations in trade, so that we don't see the erosion of our industrial base and the loss of our American jobs going overseas, as we have seen in these last few years. And one of the things we have to do to stop that erosion is to stop the use of drugs. And we're committing ourselves to do that thing. That's what makes America strong. To provide the jobs and the opportunities, and yes, the opportunities for health care, opportunities for pregnant women to have a sufficient and adequate diet, that their children may be born with the same opportunities that other children are born. You talk about the rights of the unborn. Let me mention a right of the unborn. California Institute of Technology has done some interesting studies. They conclude that the two most important things to determine the intellectual capacity of an adult both occur before that person reaches the age of 18 months. One of them has to do with how much time the mother or some other person spends with that child, talking to the child, reading to the child, personally in interrelationships directly with the child, the first 18 months of life. But one of them starts before that. The amount of protein, the quality of the diet ingested by the mother during the period of pregnancy. Most important single thing to determine the capacity of that child when fully grown. rights of the unborn. What a wonderful investment in the future and the strength of this country of ours if we can see to it that every pregnant mother of an American child has the right diet, enough to eat, adequate care. That isn't an expense, that's an investment. And so, my friends, I salute you on this 40th anniversary of your organization. You've worked for those things so fundamental to American society, health care. Care for those who need it. Hubert Humphrey, who was a friend of mine, used to say that moral strength of a society may be measured by how it treats those who are in the dawn of life, the children, those who are in the twilight of life, the aged, and those who are in the shadows of life, the handicapped, the disadvantaged. You have been in the dark of night, a stellar light that has moved to show us the way, and for that I express to you my profound and abundant thanks. And in honor of those who founded this organization 40 years ago, the women whose help and support and sacrifice have made it thrive, I am thinking that our greatest days are yet to come. Our priorities must be right. We must understand what makes a country strong. It isn't just weapons. No, not at all. It's those strong, fibrous things that build a society together, give us a sense of oneness. And do it for the sake of the youngest among us, so that their future may be better than ours. John Adams said it pretty well. He said, "I must study politics and war in order that my sons may be able to study mathematics and philosophy, in order that their sons may study painting and poetry and music." That's been the American dream, that each succeeding generation may do a little better. And so we make some sacrifices to that end. And that's what this organization has stood for. An old man traveling a lone highway came at evening, cold and gray, to a chasm, vast and deep and wide, through which was flowing a sullen tide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim. The sullen stream had no fears for him. But he paused when safe on the other side and built a bridge to span the tide. "Old man," said a fellow pilgrim there, "you're wasting your time building here. Your journey will end with the end of day. You never again must come this way. You've crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build you the bridge at eventide?" The builder lifted his old gray head. "Good friend, in the path I've come," he said, "there follows after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way." This bridge, said he, "which has been as naught to me, to that youth may a pitfall be. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I'm building this bridge for him." Now that's what this organization has been. It's what you are today. It's what, with God's help, you will be in the future. And for you, I express my gratitude for the opportunity to be with you, and for your friendship, which has meant so much to me. Y permítame decir, espero para usted y cada uno de ustedes que será sol en su jardín cada día, una canción en su corazón cada noche, buen trabajo para sus manos, un camino derecho para sus pies, y un sueño para su mente. la mano de un buen amigo tocando a su puerta. Felicidades a su hogar y las bendiciones de Dios para ustedes siempre.